Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is February 5th, 2015. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Upcoming events. We have the wrap-up PDF being posted. If it's not posted now, it will be in the next 24 hours. This is our annual wrap-up, and we've really gone to town with the PDF. We're going to be publishing booklets, which will also be available next week at cost to subscribers, subscriber only. You have to be a subscriber to get it, but you can download the PDF at any time. Feel free to share with family and friends. Again, the annual wrap-up is very important. It's where I sort of organize my framework for the year. I develop the scenarios that are the basis of investment strategy and allocation. And Ben Lazzardi has done an incredible job on building the PDF, so I really hope you access that and enjoy it. If you're a new subscriber, it's a great way to get an introduction to many of the different Solari reports that are going to be invaluable, and we describe them within the different parts of the material, and so you can see how they fit in and how they fit together. So please make sure you access that PDF, or if you want the booklet as well. Our theme tonight is the 2015 Debt Dance Begins. As I said, we've got a game of musical chairs going on. You've got more debt that can be paid back around the world. And the question is how those haircuts and that reengineering is going to be made. This starts with the Greek negotiations. We had a new election in Greece. And as John Laughlin and I talked about in our wonderful discussion about Europe, Greece has now got a new administration and is they've had their fill of austerity. But these negotiations are only the beginning. What's interesting is as they begin, what you start to see is the interdependence on things. The Germans, yes, lent a lot of money. They want to get paid back. But the reality is they were financing their customers. And that's the centralization challenge. If you bankrupt and destroy your customers, that's not good for exports. But we're seeing a flight to quality in the market. If you look at the year-to-date, the two strongest performances are the 20-year Treasury and gold, both up 7%. So that signifies real concern in the market about credit quality. So money and markets, let's start by looking at a roundup of the market. I usually do this towards the end, but I think it really says a little bit about what's going on. We're in earnings announcement week, and the S&P has been very skittish. So good earnings, the stock is soaring. Bad earnings, they're getting hammered. We saw the big 3D printer, lead 3D printer company Stratasys has come down 33% on disappointing earnings and disappointing forward guidance. And I said, you know, if the stock is worth 33% less today, then it wasn't worth what they said it was tomorrow. Somebody or something's wrong. So the market is clearly skittish. To give you a roundup of performance year to date, so this is as of the February 4th close, because I'm recording this before the close on the 5th. AGG, the bond aggregate, up 1.65% for the year. As I said, the S&P flat up about 0.84%. Interestingly enough, the emerging markets we all expected to get hammered is up 2.5%. The Chinese market up 3.68%, that's the Chinese large caps. The developed countries are up 2.6%. That's all of the developed countries minus North America. And then, as I said, the long treasury, 20-year plus ETF treasury and GLD, the gold ETF, are both up 7%. U.S. dollar index off slightly a tad, but clearly the direction appears to be still upward. Nothing changed there. So it's backed off to 94.5 from 94.8, but still very strong. Great article that I posted to the blog from John Robino. It says, apparently you can't just surrender in a currency war, pointing out that the Swiss are now buying euros to try and bring their currency down because it's whacking exports something terribly. And that's part of the dance here. You see so many different countries trying to keep exports going in the face of slower growth. And, of course, the currency is right at the heart of their challenge. We see Nestle bonds turn to negative yield. Now, I think part of that is probably a currency play, but You're literally paying Nestle to hold your money for you. I put up a book review of George Friedman, founder and chairman of Stratfor. It's a new book called Flashpoints, The Emerging Crisis in Europe. Friedman is always unabashedly American, but I like his work because he really focuses on the importance of geography, and he takes you back to the geography, the role of geography in history, and then the role of geography currently. And he makes some very interesting and good points about what's going on in Europe. The European Union consumer market is the wealthiest single market in the world. And as he points out, it's always dangerous to be responsible for that much wealth when contiguous to your currency, you don't control one military capacity. And the warning is that wolves abound, and I agree. So some interesting points, the review's up on the blog. The Germans are getting squeezed. On one hand, they don't want to have nuclear accidents like Fukushima, so there's a real pressure to get off nuclear. On the same time, they don't want to be dependent on Russian gas because of the politics of that, and right now they're very dependent. And we're seeing real breakthrough material coming out of the great engineers. So the squeeze is on, and two announcements or two things on the blog this week that you might want to check out. One is electric car powered by salt water. So can imagine if Germany can drive all their cars on salt water. That's enormously breakthrough energy, but it's clearly it's quite a doozy of the car. You can't watch that video and not want one. And then an announcement from the Swiss at one of the universities that using graphene, they've got a solar panel up to 60% efficiency, which is a real breakthrough. If you can get solar panels up to 60%, that's a real breakthrough, particularly if we can get breakthroughs on the battery. And remember, we made a big fuss about Musk's announcement on open sourcing his patents, again, because he understands the importance of battery breakthrough. So we're watching these breakthroughs regularly as people are squeezed, but keep an eye on the Germans. Russian banks are now transacting MasterCard through the national payment system, again, trying to get independent as a result of the sanctions. A real important sign of independence is China. China's rating agency just gave its highest investment grade to Gazprom. If the Chinese or any of the BRICS can create a real rating agency infrastructure independent of the Anglo-American alliance, that's going to be very interesting. So we'll see how institutional investors react and depend on that rating. But the story's up on the blog. China, another story about how China plans to develop and invest $4 trillion in reserves along the Silk Road and is making pledges for both industry, nuclear, and rail. One of the things that interests me, of course, is high-speed rail and what they're doing with high-speed rail. But if they decide to build out those rail and transport networks along the Silk Road, which they're clearly trying to do, it could transform the whole world. What's interesting to see is they've gone from financing for many decades now. We have China buying U.S. treasuries. That gives the government money to hand out food stamps and other government subsidies. Everybody goes down to Walmart. They buy stuff that is made in China. So China's essentially been financing their exports. Now they're moving that game from Walmart stuff, in essence, to very major infrastructure projects. So we're watching them take the next step up. Another very interesting article, speaking of German engineers, up on the blog from Bloomberg, China is turning fecal sludge into black gold. Stories about all the efforts being made in China to recycle human waste to energy and to fertilizer and other things. Very, very important area, an area for technology opportunity, particularly with the mega cities. One of the things I learned last year is that there is a remarkable absence of understanding about the military expenditures and military capacity on planet Earth and how it relates to what's going on with currencies. So I've been trying to post more on the blog on military expenditures. There's a institute in Sweden that keeps records and publishes reports on sort of what's happening in military expenditures that appears to me to be doing quite a good job. So I posted on the blog post something called Recent Trends in Military Expenditure. Global military expenditures are now up to $1.7 trillion. You know, don't ever say there's not a lot of money. There's plenty of money sloshing around. It depends on what we want to use it for. NATO is now deploying extra troops along the 6 Eastern European member states. So as China's trying to deploy railroads and nuclear plants, NATO's deploying more troops. India successfully tested its most powerful intercontinental ballistic missile. That's after Obama was visiting India. I suspect he was there to sell weapons. One of the things we've seen for the last 10 to 20 years is the extent to which the leaders of the free world are hustling weapon sales for their biggest companies. Cyber warfare just keeps getting bigger. The British Army announces it's creating a battalion of Facebook warriors. So social media is the new battleground. Glenn Greenwald had a great article, How Covert Agents Infiltrate the Internet to Manipulate, Deceive, and Destroy Reputations. That's also up on the blog. But you can imagine if the British Army, I think they're assigning 1,700 people to just count on Facebook to push their, whatever their line is. That all inspired me to do an interview with Nafees Ahmed, who, interestingly enough, was fired from The Guardian. I've always said since Greenwald wasn't fired from The Guardian, it shows you something about the kind of air cover that Snowden had. But Ahmed has a great new series called Why Google, How the CIA Made Google and Why Google Made the NSA. So it's on the relationship between Google and the different intelligence agencies, and it's very interesting and rich piece about the sort of history of how the info state came to be. And but we're seeing more and more of these articles following up on Snowden to really help people understand what's going on in that area. Washington Beat. There is an enormous amount of corporate profits of U.S.-based multinationals that have been growing around the world. And the big politics for the last couple of years, how to bring that corporate cash home. Of course, the corporations don't want to be taxed on it. The U.S. would love to see it come back to get reinvested and to get a piece into the, you know, into the tax coffers. So the president's new budget is proposing a repatriation with a much lower tax rate and tying it to finance infrastructure, and looking to get the Republicans to go along with that kind of tax plan. In connection with the budget, the U.S. is projecting that its debt needs next quarter are going to fall, saying the deficits are reduced. But Hall can't be hunky-dory. I always say that there's an orange alert out on the slow burn. There's more headlines about the British pedophile scandal and involving now allegations that the CIA kept secret dossiers on all the pedophiles in Britain. Whenever you get pedophilia scandals throwing mud back and forth like this, and particularly if you drag in the CIA, they've also got the KGB dragged in. What it tells you is the, you know, nerves are fraying and they're real problems. It's what I call the Midianite things. So I don't know what the particulars of this one are, but it, you know, it always makes me sit up and pay attention and say, is there a problem? Is the slow burn fraying? A couple other things I want you to know about that are posted on the blog. Great article about an effort in Chattanooga to do a city Wi-Fi. Everybody listening to this call is paying way too much for internet and telecommunication services if you look at what you've paid so far between your taxes and funding government research and all sort of other activities. There's no reason why your infrastructure should not be, if not free, very low cost and much higher quality. If you look at what's going on in other parts of the world, we're really behind places like Singapore. So Chattanooga has taken upon itself to try and do something about it, and it's a remarkable little video and story, so I would encourage you to check it out. It shows you what's possible. Chattanooga being a city that's shown tremendous leadership in trying to create an environment that really is conducive to great families and great communities and having a nice life. Another one I got accused as a result of something I said on Coast to Coast. Someone wrote me an email and said, well, you've always been wealthy and had great health care insurance. So I wrote something that I knew I've needed to write for a long time called Musings on Health, Health Care, and Health Insurance. I haven't had health insurance for 12 years. So I explain all the details of why and how, et cetera, et cetera. But I just couldn't let that one go by. I've told you I keep being nervous about vaccine mandates. There's been a little brouhaha about questioning that Chris Christie and Ron Paul got about vaccines and what they said. Clearly, the powers that be pressuring them to not support making vaccines voluntary. And, you can see it looks to me like somebody's sort of trying to position everything so that federally you can mandate a vaccine and you can force all the Republican candidates to get on board. It's making me a little nervous. So make sure you pressure Ron Paul to not concede on that point. Another one I wrote, The Economist had a very interesting editorial called Americans' Aristocracy is Calcifying. And I put it up on the blog with a little note. This is the second time that the Economist has sort of announced something and then following their written description. In fact, the Obama administration shifts their policy. Right after they published this, the administration canceled their their proposal to tax 529. Is there a connection? I don't know. But the reality is Americans' aristocracy is calcifying. And if you look at the Economist editorial, some very excellent points. I can't wait to see what they publish next. I did an interview with USA Watchdog. I posted on the blog under the title Changes Accelerating 2015. It's a video, and it's really a summary of many of the points in the annual wrap-up. And what was interesting is I watched the debate that rolled out after it got published, and Greg and I are always sort of going around and around. Greg Hunter is the host, because he's very much, his style is very much promoting things which I describe as fear. And I don't like to get into fear. I don't think the fear is the answer. And as a result of this, we had a wonderful subscriber post a comment. It's not the first time I've heard a comment like this. And basically what he said is, there are two sort of two models that I deal with in my life. One is sort of the bread and circus model, where everybody pretends things are fine and are entertained by the bread and circus. And the other is what I call the red pill model, where everybody faces reality and lives in a state of doom and gloom and impending disaster. And he said, what I realize is that fear model serves the national security state just as well as the bread and circus model. They both serve the powers that be. And it's really facing a reality, but being positive and using your imagination and saying, I can be responsible to build my world. I can affect this. That's what serves us. And so he pointed out how important it is to stay out of fear. And I couldn't agree more. It's up. It's a comment up on the John Rappaport, the latest John Rappaport. So you can find it on the blog. I also did a book review of a very interesting book by a guy named Tom Hill, who runs a company out in Oklahoma City called Character First. He was running into more and more challenges at his company and decided to institute a program on helping his employees build their characters in a way that would help them be individually successful. And it was so successful, he wrote it up in a book, and now there's coursework and everything else. And it was recommended to me by someone who I have tremendous trust in, a person of great integrity, who's used it in her organizations to help build character. And she's found it to be very, very helpful. So I read it, liked it, and did a little review on the book. And now I'm trying it on myself. And if I think it works, I'm going to share it with some of my other colleagues at Solarian. Maybe we'll try it. We'll see. But anyway, book review, Character First. Our hero this week is an extraordinary man. His name is Professor Jeffrey Raisman, a neuroscientist in Britain. He's the chair of neural regeneration at University College London's Institute of Neurology. And he and his team have managed to develop a method to regrow nerve cells, which have been severed. And they have been working with a hospital in Poland and have taken a man who was paralyzed from the chest down and managed to rebuild his spinal cord sufficient so that he can walk, if you can imagine that. It's quite extraordinary, and the article is up on the blog. This is a man who's been pursuing this dream for many decades, and he's achieved it, and it's an extraordinary thing. It just goes to show you what one man can do. So I would encourage you to check it out. It's very inspiring. Ask Catherine. We got a ton of questions, so let's go. I remember hearing Catherine say that the Americans are not living longer when compared when comparing 2010 census to the prior one. Are there any articles by Catherine or elsewhere that would confirm this point? I asked our blogmaster to post a commentary we posted called Lifespan Shrink for Least Educated Whites in the U.S. You can find it if you do a search on the blog, but I'll have him put a link up there, and I think that will give you what you want. Same wonderful subscriber also asked, I'm going through your movie list and wondering if you can help me. While I prefer documentaries for factual content, which of your suggested movies deals with the drug wars as it relates to your insight and experience? I think the best one is Godfather 1, Godfather 2, Godfather 3. But there are a whole series of other ones. If you look at the list of movies in the wrap up, you can see all of them. There's one American Gangster with Denzel Washington, and that I also think is very good. I noticed, he continues, I noticed that two documentaries that I regularly suggest about chemtrails is not on the list, and curious why. What in the World Are They Spraying, produced by Griffin and Murphy? Why in the World Are They Spraying, directed by Murphy? What you'll notice is those are both reviewed and strongly recommended up on the blog, and one of them was our documentary of the year, What in the World Are They Spraying? And in fact, I was I filmed with Murphy because I really love what he has done with those two. So what I'll do the next time we make that list, I'll also include all the ones we've reviewed and recommended on the blog or in the two Solari reports I did with Rappaport and Best Documentaries and Movies, which includes some that were not in the weekly Let's Go to the Movies. Then he continues, while I've not seen Kill the Messenger by Gary Webb, why is it not on your list as well? Same reason, it was reviewed and recommended on the blog. But I will make sure to get those on the list as well. Catherine, I listened to your January 15th interview with Dr. Farrell last week, and I have a question. Why, when referring to the U.S., do you call us a democracy? You're right, I should call us a republic. What I do mean sometimes when I do that is I think as a culture, we believe in the democratic process, and I'm always amazed living as where and as I do the faith that that so many Americans have in the democratic process. He continues, with the adoption of U.S. Constitution in 1789, the people established and ordained a republican form of government for the USA, and that each state in the Union was to be the same. When reciting the Pledge of Allegiance, notice that it refers to our nation, now a union of 50, as a republic. Democracy is 51% of the population telling the other 49 what to do. In a republic, the minority have rights that shall not be usurped. I agree. Great point. And then he goes on to recommend some other materials that I think are very good. One, he points out the danger of manipulating of words. Interestingly enough, if you haven't looked, go back and look at why Webster created the dictionary. He created the dictionary because he was afraid after they produced the Constitution that people would try and manipulate the Constitution by changing the meaning of the words. And if he could get all the words down in their meaning, they couldn't be manipulated. It's very clever. It's go back and look at the history of Webster and what he did. He was right. It's absolutely the games that they play. I won't read the whole thing. He points out how Farrell is familiar with Magna Carta and the Anti-Federalist Papers. I'm very interested in the Anti-Federalist Papers, but until Dr. Farrell told me about it, I didn't know. And he recommends a gentleman named Bill Thornton, who I'm going to check out, and I appreciate that that recommendation. Dear Catherine, in the last 2 years of his life, or so, it began looking more and more to me like Michael Rupert may have really been a disinformation agent. What are your thoughts on this? I don't know. Mike's work, when I first met him, he did a lot of great work on the Clinton impeachment, on drug running by the U.S. intelligence agencies and military. He did a lot of good work early on 9/11, but there was a steady deterioration from about 2001 on that I dealt with, and I finally stopped associating with him. I'll give you a couple examples. When his office was destroyed, his staff told me they believed that he had done it on purpose to get the insurance money and draw attention to himself. When he got, after he published his first book with a lot of material on 9/11, he started making comments that the Mossad was not involved and the Israelis were not involved. And I said, Mike, you have no evidence or proof of that. You know, stop saying it. And I demanded evidence or proof. He didn't have any. And we had a little bit of a tiff about it. Then when Gary Webb died, he made a big to-do about how it really was suicide. And I said, Mike, you haven't seen the autopsy. You have no evidence. And it was really very inappropriate and over the top. And it made me ask the same question: is Mike doing this? You know, does somebody have a control file on Mike? Is he doing it? Then I had a problem with him advertising a firm on his website that was selling numismatics and really mispricing things. And finally said to his editor, look, you either take that down or I'm going to write an article, you know, blasting you and warning everybody as to what you're up to over there. And then finally there was, he was working on a project with us just on an informal basis and was very inappropriately unprofessional with one of my staff, which is something you just don't treat people who work like me like that. And finally, I just felt Mike was basically promoting and selling fear. And so there was a steady deterioration of our relationship from about 2002 to 2005 or 2006. And finally, I just cut off all association because I just said, whatever is going on, he's not in integrity. So I don't know what the problem was, but there were a couple times when he was clearly promoting something without any evidence or fact that I just thought was, one, it was not true, and two, it didn't make any sense. He had no basis for his opinion. So I don't know what happened to Mike, but he clearly went, you know, from 2002 on, he just went way downhill. Hi, Catherine. I've been spending 4 hours a day listening to your podcast. I never went to college since spent the last 50 years at, I won't say the name, racetrack. I'm just fascinated by the education I'm now getting. Thank you. Question, I read today that the Saudis continue to pump oil in spite of deflated price. Do you think it's about to go back up again? Take pressure off Russia. I can't quite figure this out unless it isn't true. I think they're going to play the oil card until they stop. It wouldn't surprise me. My guess is we're going to see the price back to 60 or 70 by mid-year. I don't think it goes much higher. I think there's just too much softness and deflation in the global economy for it to go much higher than that. I don't expect to see 100 again. I agree with the Saudi prince who said that. Hello, Ms. Fitz. Why put so much value in gold? Even if 3 billion people are buying gold but do not have toilets, I think it would indicate the quality of the brain power of the population. I do respect its potential, however. Do you see the subversion of priorities, the damage to populations, physical economy, et cetera, goes on? I'm not, you know, I like gold because I like having a money that is, can store value divorced of government and which is free of government control. I can put a cougar ant in my pocket. I can fly anywhere in the world and that money can be recognized globally. And it's a store of value. Obviously, it's a store of value that's volatile in fiat currency pricing. But I just think gold has a role to play in supporting freedom. Do I think it's important as having toilets? No, I'd obviously rather have a toilet than a cougar ant, but I think there's a place for both. I don't think it's either or. And I think gold is having a currency that can function and store value outside of government is a very important condition precedent to freedom. Hi, Catherine. Just signed on for your subscription. Listen to all your last 3 Solari reports. You're the best. I wonder if the United States would ever just default on our debts and deflate out the dollar. give up trying to save the world and save ourselves. If the world economy is all collapsed, you said we have the largest fleets in the world. What would other countries say if we just told them, sorry, we can't pay you back or help you out anymore? What would happen? To a certain extent, if you look at how we're repositioning ourselves on a much more self-sufficient basis, it seems like we are doing that. But I don't see any reason why the U.S. would ever default. You need to understand that when we borrow money denominated in dollars, we can simply create the money we use to pay back the debt. So if I owe $17 trillion and I can just print those dollars off of my computer, why would I ever default? It doesn't make any sense. Now, those dollars may be worthless, but there's no reason why I should ever default. Imagine if you could create a currency on your computer and simply print out dollars or send them digitally around the world to fund whatever you wanted. Why would you ever default? You just create the money you need to pay back the debt, because the debt is denominated in a currency you control. So default, I can't fathom why the United States would ever default unless they intentionally wanted to bankrupt somebody else. It makes sense to debase. It doesn't make sense to default. I do think that the idea that we're going to continue to police the world the way we have is things have changed. I go into this a lot in the wrap up. The Bretton Woods system is unraveling. So we're not going to be the global policeman to the extent that we have been. Now we're still a very, very significant presence, but I think over time the Bretton Woods system is clearly unraveling, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. If you look at the relative positions of North America vis-a-vis the rest of the world, we're the least dependent on exports. We have many multinationals that are dependent on exports, but if you look at the United States, we're in a very strong position, particularly because we're attracting and cycling intellectual capital from all over the world here. As I describe in the real estate, we've got the most strategic piece of real estate available on the globe. And I would encourage you, if you haven't listened to the wrap-up, get that PDF and really study it. I think it can help. Dear Catherine, I have it from Reliable Information, HR 2885, if signed, will put into place a national ID system. I've not verified this information myself. I'm only going on what I consider to be a reliable source. I think it's very unlikely the HR 2885 is ever going to be passed. I do think there's real pressure for a variety of reasons to do a national ID. So I think a national ID is something I would be opposed to, but we are at risk of getting one, but not through HR 2885. I think that's going to be one of the squabbles around any attempt at an immigration legislation. Dear Catherine, I recently met one of your subscribers in China. Blah, blah, blah. As we discussed various topics over supper, I mentioned that I had spoken with Franklin Sanders back in 2009. There was a pause in the conversation as we realized everyone at the table had begun the process of awakening to the new realities of the world we live in. They shared with me some downloads of your podcast, and I realized that you have a perspective that I've been looking for, so now they're now a subscriber. Hello, Catherine. I love your reports, and you are grounded and informed on so many levels. I've come to realize so many things in the past few years. I'm a financial planner trying to help many understand where we are. What is the beltway to keep those? What is the beltway to keep those informed? Most of what I educate others on seems crazy compared to what CNBC states or even Bloomberg. Stock market scares me to death because of so much manipulation and corruption, from LIBOR to gold and commodities manipulation. Seems there are two realities I live in by perception, and the one that shows we need a financial reset of the system. Too much debt and derivative from overprinting. Again, as I said, the great debt squabble begins. He asked for sources. I strongly recommend you get the annual wrap-up, get the print, the PDF, read it, study it. And within the wrap-up, there are a lot of different Saleri reports recommended. And I would recommend listening to those various guests and really accessing their work and books. I think it can help enormously. So I would start with a wrap-up and all the various recommendations and links within the wrap-up. Greetings. I want to know if the Salieri Report and the Building Wealth Collection actually could benefit and have relevance to people overseas. I'm from Australia. Yes and no. Yes and no. There's some things which are clearly very North America-centric, but there's a ton that translates wherever you are in the world, and particularly if you're anywhere within the Anglo-American Alliance. I very much enjoy being a Salieri Report member. Are you ever going to have a lunch with Catherine in the southeastern states? I live in Florida. That's a good question. I don't get to Florida too much. But part of it was bush country, but I get to Texas a rare amount. That's bush country too. Anyway, so we'll put Florida on the list, and I will definitely try and make it to Florida. Florida's a beautiful state, and I love many parts of it. Let's go to the movies. Instead of having a new movie or documentary, I just ask that everyone watch the InfoWars interview with Aaron Rousseau, where he talks about chipping people. I wanted you to watch it in connection with having Dr. Catherine Albrecht back. Aaron Rousseau was a Hollywood producer, unbelievably successful. He's the guy who produced Trading Places, one of my favorite movies, the movie The Rose about Janis Joplin. He left a unbelievably successful Hollywood movie career to get involved in politics. He was so concerned about the centralization that was going on. And he made a documentary, From Freedom to Fascism, which was the first great documentary warning people of how crazy things were. And it was what put me on to Dr. Catherine Albrecht. I had not met her before. He was an absolutely wonderful man, charismatic, brilliant, and lion-hearted. Catherine and I talk about him in our interview this week. He gave, before he died, he gave a very open interview with Alex Jones and warned everyone about the plans to get literally chips implanted in people. And, you know, we live in a system where we're governed by people who really do believe in slavery and mind control and practice it. And it's very hard for many Americans to fathom that that is so. And that's why sometimes I put up things or we have interviews on the more gruesome side of life, because I want you to understand that so. And I want to make sure that you don't embrace any of the technology that is going to put us in that position. You're watching a huge effort last year, and it's doubling up this year, to encourage consumers to wear technology that makes it possible for other people to track and financially harvest us. And my attitude is, no, whatever you do, don't make this fashionable. Let's not make this fashionable. So it's a short interview, but I really think it's one of those, it should be a mandatory watch for anybody to be an educated person in this day and age. And I don't know of anyone more wonderful and credible, and I don't know a person of greater integrity than Aaron Rousseau. He was just an extraordinary and wonderful man. So if you're going to listen to somebody definitely you should listen with and listen to. And that brings us to our interview with Dr. Catherine Albrecht. She's no stranger to the Salieri Report. She's been on twice talking about spy chips. Great, great work, great career on helping us understand the nature of invasive technology, digital technology, to kind of track and use us. But she's got a new book for kids called I Won't Take the Mark. And it's written from the Christian point of view. She's a Christian and really helping Christians help their children learn about this stuff and make sure they're protected from it. I encouraged you in the wrap-up to focus this year on something called transhumanism. We'll talk more about it. It's the phenomenon of integrating machines into humans, including without consent. And I think it's going to become a more and more important issue. And it was one of the reasons I wanted Dr. Albrecht to join us. We interviewed on January 12th, and then 2 weeks later, I just learned Catherine went into the hospital for emergency surgery, and she's back out now. But I would just ask that you keep her in your prayers. We'll post the information up on the blog in the subscriber only area in the blog post for the Soleria report. But particularly if you've ever struggled with how you warn your kids about this stuff, I think you'll enjoy the interview and her other interviews in the blog. Just an amazing, talented woman who's done incredible work to help warn us about the invasive uses of technology. Okay, well, that's it for this week. Next week, a great interview with Dr. Nafees Ahmed, a wonderful British investigative reporter, and he's got a new series on Google and the CIA and NSA that is just, it just knocks your socks off. It's up on the blog. He's got a new crowdfunding effort called Insurge Intelligence. We're going to support it, and I hope you do too. Incredible investigative reporting, and it's exactly the kind of investigative reporting we need. Then February 19th, wonderful economist, former Fed economist Bill Bergman is going to join us to talk about financial transparency. I think financial transparency is one of the most important things we can do to really shift things and make a difference in a way that is positive and good for us. And then I can't figure out which we're going to do first. We've got two after that coming up, the first quarter equity overview that I'm very excited about. We're going to be talking more about Planet Equity. And then Breakthrough Energy, I've got Joel Garbin lined up to walk us through. I keep getting the question, is the oil cart operating in this? Are we just bringing the oil price down to sort of get Russia? Or is there a real change going on in the market as a result of Breakthrough Energy technology? So I invited Joel to join me and talk through some of the latest developments in Breakthrough Energy technology and what we think they mean and to the extent that they intersect with the oil price and market valuations for oil and gas companies. So we'll be doing that and the equity report after the Bill Bergman interview. So until next week with Nafees Ahmed, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.